So, I will try to make a general introduction to this conference by presenting what I think is more or less the status of the art in our field. And let's keep all preliminaries and start by saying that overall the electroweak precision tests support the standard model and analyte Higgs. If you take this standard table, the overall chi-square is not really great. However, much of the fault is due to NUTEV, because NUTEV contributes 3 sigma, so 9 units to the chi-square. I will discuss in a moment that I don't think that NUTEV belongs to this table, and so if you take it out, then the chi-square is much better. And it's not my phone, I hope. Thanks a lot. Yes, thanks. So, NUTEV is a neutrino nucleon deep nasty scattering experiment, and it measures the ratio of neutral currents to charged current cross sections from neutrinos and antineutrinos. And the aim is to measure sine squared theta. It takes too much, I have no force to push strongly now.
That's what happens.
I don't know. So from these cross sections you can extract sine squared theta. Essentially, you extract the ratio mw square or mz square. This experiment is a great experiment, because if you look at the precision they get here in comparison to the old experiments, you see that there is a tremendous progress. However, the problem is the analysis that they do. In a sense, they use the same QCD tools that were used for past experiments with less accuracy. And those are no more adequate to the precision they have. For example, they use the QCD lowest order Parton analysis and neglect some effects which are indeed instead important. For example, a small asymmetry in the momentum carried by strange minus anti-strange quarks can have a large effect for this extraction. They claim to have measured this asymmetry from the muon production in neutrino deep nasty scattering, but a low energy analysis of S minus S bar is well known to make no sense and cannot be also transplanted from one process to another, because the neglected corrections of order alpha S times valence are clearly larger than the signal. Let's try this other one. Also, a tiny violation of isospin symmetry in Parton distribution can be important. In fact, you see, the important quantity, I forgot X, is the momentum carrier, dx times x times s minus s bar, which is this thing s minus. Okay, they claim to have measured that and found to be negative, which would increase the discrepancy. However, again, as I said, they use the parametrization, which does not conserve strangeness, so this is can induce a strong bias. And also, they don't make a general fit of this quantity. Recently, the CTEQ collaboration has made, let's say, a professional fit for this quantity using all the information, and they find instead that the most reasonable value for this quantity is positive. And so, you see, if it is indeed positive, this quantity, then the shift in sine squared theta w measured by NUTEV is in the right direction to reduce the discrepancy. And you see that the shift is of the order of the error they have, And so that this discrepancy goes down to a level which is much less worrying. Atomic parity violation is another low energy experiment. There have been recently many up and downs because the experimental value actually contains a variety of QED and nuclear effects, theoretical corrections that are changing all the time. At the moment, there is perfect agreement with theory and experiment on atomic parity violation. Instead, the previous table does not contain the G minus 2 experiment. This is because that table contains essentially all experiments that tell you something about the Higgs mass. The G minus 2 has not directly relation with the Higgs mass. Anyway, in 2002, the discrepancy was kind of 3 sigma of the in units 10 to the minus 10 experiment minus theory was something like 30 plus or minus 11. And most of the theoretical errors arises from the hadronic component of the photon vacuum polarization that contributes 6 to this error of 11. And the hadronic contribution to light by light scattering that contributes 4. Then there have been extra measurements or cross sections recently, and the error went and the discrepancy went somewhat down. Of course, there are problems also in the theory evaluation. For example, there are different ways to evaluate the hadronic corrections to the photon vacuum polarization. You can use the plus and minus data or tau data by sort of rotating the tau with current is V minus A, the electromagnetic is V, but you can account for the difference. However, the two determinations are different, as you see. And the tau is much closer to the data than the E plus E minus. However, E plus E minus is more direct. And you see, the discrepancy is really in the data in a particular region. If you compare E plus E minus and tau, there is some discrepancy. So this is a problem which has to do also with the data on hadronic cross sections. Now, when I was on the plane to come here, Zoltán Kunst said, you know, there is a new result from BNL. And in fact, BNL has now measured the mu minus G minus 2. Previously, it was the mu plus. The two results are compatible. That's a good thing, not only for CPT, but also for reassuring us. Okay? And you see that the average went a little bit up. So the discrepancy is again in the 3 sigma range if you compare with the plus and minus. You see this is the plus and minus, this is tau. I find tremendously funny that one cannot find $5 million to continue this experiment. Because really, they want to close this experiment. This is one of the few interesting experimental things that there are around. Now, question mark. Now, if you go back to the electroweak precision test, if you really look at the most classic test, first of all, the measured value of sine squared theta from leptonic left-right asymmetry from slack and the hadronic asymmetry, the B forward vector asymmetry at left, are 3 sigma away. This is very annoying. You see that these two best measurements are away. There is some clustering of the leptonic asymmetries and the hadronic symmetries on the two sides, but this is the big thing, the difference of these two numbers. So when they combine the two blindly and pretend the precision as small as that, this is too small in comparison of the dispersion between these two data, which is about 3 sigma. So this is bad. Also because this number is tremendously important for the Higgs mass question. Here is a plot of sine squared theta effective versus the Higgs mass. This is the theoretical standard model curve for the central value of m-top and the 1 sigma dispersion of m-top. And each point has been drawn on the theory curve in correspondence to the Higgs mass that it would indicate. So you see that if you take the leptonic asymmetry, you would get a Higgs mass of 56 GeV, which is below the direct search limit, which is 114 GeV. If you take instead the hadronic asymmetry, you get 450 GeV for the Higgs. And the so-called world average, which is combining these two things, which is a sort of political compromise that brings you in agreement with the direct search limit. But as you see, this is not very impressive. Another problem, or another fact, is that the measure value of MW is somewhat high, in the sense that for example, until recently this was the picture, so the central value would indicate 40 GeV of the Higgs. Note, however, that if MT increases, for example, if from 174 we go to 179, then the situation improves a bit, not negligibly. And this is also true for the previous figure. Since, for example, the zero has, I don't know, sort of unofficially said that they tend to go up, this could be interesting. However, recently the situation on this front has become better because Aleph had a reanalysis that put their value considerably down. And so if you put it in the world average, you go down by about a sigma, which goes in the direction of making this value, this central value, 60 GeV, again, like sin squared theta leptonic. Okay? So, then what happens? You see, in any case, the central value of MH from the fit is always below the direct lower limit, which is MH larger than 114 GeV. And this is more true if sin squared theta effective is the true value is closer to the leptonic determination, because if you had only the leptons, that would give you MH less than 110 GeV at 95% confidence level. That would be terrible. So maybe this covers some new physics effect. I'll discuss that. So here is a different picture that shows that in terms, these are the implications for the Higgs mass of each single test. And you see that these ones are the most important, in a sense. This is another leptonic asymmetry, by the way. But you see that this tension between these two sets of data is evident. Now, so let's try to make it more quantitative. Let's take the basic quantities. You see, these are the really important quantities. Other additional quantities add little. Suppose you take these ones, and then you make the following exercise. Suppose you take the leptonic and hadronic quantities both as input, then you have what is normally done, let's say. Yeah? And so you get the central values under GV and the limit 212. These numbers are a little bit different than the official ones because we are restricting to these observables. Then if you only take sin squared theta from the hadronic asymmetries, then the chi-square does not get better, as you see, because there is a discrepancy between this value and MW. If you take sin squared theta from the leptonic asymmetry, then the chi-square becomes beautiful. The only problem is that the value of the Higgs, which is obtained, is too low, and the upper limit is below the direct limit. Okay? So you see that either if you go that way or that way, you are always in trouble. Now, of course, one says, but yes, but there is this difference. Maybe this is new physics. Well, in fact, in principle, there could be a modification of the ZBB bar vertex. But this appears not to be very easy to accept, because the other quantities like RB and AB directly measured at SLD with polarized beams do not support a discrepancy. This is a complicated slide, but what tells you is that in order to change the prediction of the standard model, which is very close to one for this asymmetry, because in the standard model for down quarks, G right is very small. So you have to give a big kick to G right. And then why don't you see it in RB, for example, which is pretty normal, okay? Or also in, you see, the kicker you need is 30%, so it's a big kick. Indeed, this is plotted here. If you want to fit RB and the combination of all data on AB, which in a sense dilutes the big discrepancy here by this value, which is instead in agreement, although less precise, and you see that you should give a kick of 30% to G right. That would need a three-level modification. So, for example, a mixing with some new vector light doublet with exotic charges, vector light not to disturb other precision tests. So you can do it in principle, but does not appear very elegant. Of course, maybe this is simply an experimental problem. Then this is unfortunate because this discrepancy makes the interpretation of precision tests ambiguous. On the other hand, all these fitting are done in the standard model. So we assume the standard model. On the other hand, nobody believes in the standard model, even at the weak scale. We are amazed that we don't see deviations. So probably there can be some deviations of the order of one sigma. And so, for example, one observation that we made some time ago is that if indeed sine squared theta is close to the leptons, so that you get a good chi-square, but clashes with the Higgs limit, in this case, if you introduce supersymmetry and you move in the region of parameter space where leptons, charginos and neutralinos are light with moderately large tangent beta, then you can solve the MH problem and lead to a better fit to the data. You know, if you go beyond the standard model, you have to do the analysis in some way, and then there is this technology of the epsilon parameters or the STU parameters, and practically, you see, the epsilon parameters are defined from some basic observables, and then, of course, if you have a lepton universality, the muons can be replaced with the average of leptons. If lepton and hadrons behave in the same way, you can add the hadronic widths. And then you can compare the measured value of these epsilon parameters, which would be zero in the three-level standard model plus PURQED or PURQCD corrections. And so if you repeat the previous analysis, you get this result that I'll try to explain. You see, the red is the basic defining observables. Here we only add hadrons. So if hadrons and leptons behave in this respect in the same way, they should be the same. And in fact, they are, you see. So the problem has not to do specifically with leptons or with hadrons. However, these figures here are done with the leptonic sine squared theta, while the green ones are done with the combination of the two. And you see that there is a big difference, okay? This is epsilon 2 versus epsilon 3. This means U versus S. And this is S versus T. Epsilon 1 is T. So what you see here? You see, for example, this is the standard model prediction. The Higgs mass increasing goes up. then you see that, for example, epsilon 2, or U, is always down. This is because Mw is high. And then you see that epsilon 3, or S, would be okay if you take the green. Well, it's bad if you take the other ones. This is this Higgs, epsilon 3 is the most sensitive to the Higgs mass. So the fact that if you take the world average, you get okay. If you take only the leptonic, you see that the Higgs problem reflects reflects in the fact that the epsilon 3 is below. Okay, epsilon 1 is okay instead, as you see here. So epsilon 1 is sensitive, for example, to things like the top quark that do not decouple, etc. So this is a translation in this language of the results we already have seen. By the way, these are the present values of these parameters. You see, for example, for epsilon 3, the error is 1 unit in 10 to the minus 3. For comparison, addition of a chiral quark doublet would give plus 1.4. So these data are excluding this sort of thing, especially because of this plus sign, because in case we would like minus. Now, light Slepton and light Chargino supersymmetry can lower the prediction in the right direction in both planes. You see, it does not affect epsilon 1, but brings epsilon 2 and epsilon 3 in better agreement with the data. But we need Sleptons to be close to their limits. For example, this is the Slepton mass. The limit now is around 100. It must be close by. And especially this neutrino mass, but must be especially light, which can only be obtained if this term is large, so cosine 2 beta near 1, which means tangent beta 3, 4 at least. Okay? Then this neutrino can be much lighter than this lepton. And this is good. You see, given the pattern of deviation, so we want this Chargino to be below 140 or so in this region. Then the corrections to epsilon 1 are very small, to epsilon 3 a bit larger, and to epsilon 2 smaller. And you see that this is a plot delta Mw, delta sine squared theta effective. This is what you want. The standard model would be 0, 0, right? Because the shifts are with respect to the standard model. This is what you would like. And this is where light, lepton, and Chargino supersymmetry will bring you. This is what you obtain for neutrinos being light alone. And this is what you gain if also Charginos are light. Okay, the sign of mu is irrelevant for this problem, as you see, but it's very crucial for G minus 2. So because we were talking of G minus 2, I can tell you that this model is still compatible with the G minus 2 results. Actually, the light Chargino brings a contribution to the anomalous magnetic moment. Experimentally, this quantity in units 10 to the minus 11 is about 300, as we have seen. And that can be obtained, for example, if tangent beta is 4 and the mass of the Chargino is around 140 GeV. But we want to see a deviation, okay? So I hope eventually this number experimentally will become 400, for example. That would be very nice for this kind of model. Now, this is the situation with the standard model. So you see that by and large, the standard model works very well. So why not to find the Higgs and declare particle physics solved? Well, because first of all, you have to find it. And so the LHC is the machine for it. Okay? However, as you well know, there are conceptual problems, especially how to include quantum gravity and if the hierarchy problem. Then, for example, dark matter in the universe is not in the standard model. There are the neutrino masses that tell you that the cosmological constant is a big problem and remains a big problem. We have no model that solves this thing, as far as I know, in a reasonable way. And so, so everybody is convinced that there must be new physics. Especially, everybody is convinced that there must be new physics near the weak scale. This is because of a very concrete and solid problem, which nowadays is also called the little hierarchy problem. Forget the Planck mass, but if you take the top loop, for example, correction to the Higgs mass, delta m square top, in terms of the cutoff, gives a quadratic dependence, and this is the correction. So if you take the cutoff as a parametrization of our ignorance about the physics at high momenta, so where the regime of the standard model will change, that should happen at around 1 TB if you want this quantity to have the same value that radiative corrections indicate, so 100 to 100 GB for the Higgs mass. The paradox is that since MH is light, then new physics must be very close, but then why the hell we didn't see it already? So this is the problem. This is a stringent condition on the completion of the standard model at the weak scale, that it should be compatible with this paradox. Now, the standard way beyond the standard model is to extend the standard model by supersymmetry. And then the lambda is replaced by the splitting of the SUSY multiplet, and this is the most widely accepted model. Another rather attractive a priori possibility is to eliminate scalars from the theory by making the Higgs as a compound of some sort of fermions. Okay, but then it is clear that you need a very strong force nearby, and then it is difficult to hide these enormous forces from precision tests. So LEP has made the case for technical or more difficult, to say the least. There are new avenues that have been more recently explored. Large space-time dimensions that bring M-Planck to order 1 TV, which is a very rich framework where many different directions are possible, and people are working on it. It is not clear that it really can work. For example, we will see in a moment. And also there are models where extra symmetries allow the Higgs mass to be produced only at two loops, so that the coefficient in front of lambda square becomes much smaller and lambda can be larger, okay? But then the theory becomes strongly interacting, and again there are problems with precision tests. So let's give a few words about these various avenues. So SUSY at the Fermi scale has the advantage that, first of all, everybody thinks that SUSY is established at the Planck mass. So why not to try to profit of this possibility also for low energy? And in fact, one can imagine frameworks where this can happen. For example, the most classic possibility is the breaking by gravity mediation, okay? The end result is a model which is well-defined, renormalizable, computable, perturbative, and the theory is formulated, etc. And it fits the precision data. So in a sense, this is really an alternative possibility. People say it's not economic because there are 150 parameters, but in the standard model there are now with neutrino masses 27, 29, so I mean 29, 150, more or less is the same. It's up to the theory. No, these are problems that can be delayed to the theory of everything, which is developed in this institute continuously. Okay? The important thing that I want to underline is that the supersymmetry way is the only one that is compatible and actually supported with the idea of grand unification. Namely, and this is an idea that I think none of us would like to give up very easily. As you know, coupling unification, precise coupling unification, fails in the standard model, is compatible in supersymmetry, okay? So and it's clear, also proton decay will not be consistent with the experiment without supersymmetry, but it becomes so with supersymmetry. So GATS and supersymmetry very well match, while technicolor, large extra dimension, little Higgs, etc., we cannot say are incompatible but with grand unification, but certainly the path from low energy to grand unification becomes dark, not transparent, so we lose this connection. That's a very important thing to say. Now, recently neutrino masses have added, in my opinion, very much to our confidence in the picture with GATS, because from this photo you see that the neutrino masses are really special. Between the top quark and the atmospheric neutrino frequency, there is a factor 10 to the 12, which remembers M GATT over M DAP. And then if you want to make a model where the neutrinos are exactly massless in a natural way, you have to abolish the redundant neutrino and impose the lepton number strict conservation. Instead, for small neutrino masses, you just loosen these conditions, making new right very heavy, and the lepton number tiny violated. And in fact, as you know, if you take the number for the atmospheric neutrino frequency, and you take a number for the Dirac mass of the order of the vacuum expectation value of the Higgs, you get a mass close to grand unification, which I think is very interesting. Now, also, it's also interesting that these heavy right-handed neutrinos that decay with lepton number violation appear to offer a very good model for baryogenesis via leptogenesis to happen near the GATS scale, where the mass of this new right sits, which is very good because the idea of baryogenesis near the weak scale in the standard model has been ruled out, but also in the supersymmetric model has been made very marginal. And instead, the observed neutrino, light neutrino masses seem to be in the right ballpark to support this explanation. Also, in the supersymmetry scenario, we have very good candidate for dark matter, the neutralino. So on the other hand, we know that neutrinos contribute very little to the overall balance of matter in the universe. And again, in these alternative models, there is no clear candidate for this. By the way, as I said already that the cosmological constant is the big problem. It's interesting that the number for omega lambda, which is given from cosmology, corresponds to a scale of the order of 10 to the minus 3 electron volt, or a distance of 0.1 millimeters, which is strangely close to the light neutrino masses. In other words, if one would make a model where this rho lambda is the fourth root of rho lambda is lambda electron weak square over M Planck, we would be in the right ballpark. Okay? Also, there is this problem, why now? If the constant was a constant, it would be strange that they meet right now with the matter component which goes down very fast, etc. And this suggests that probably the constant is not the constant, but the field, and that this coincidence is something dynamic. But these problems are, let's say, ununderstood. Now, however, so symmetry is great, supersymmetry is great. However, it does not exist in experiment so far, okay? And the lack of SUSY signals at LEP, plus the lower limit of MH, cause problems for minimal SUSY. I am embarrassed to say that I have made in the past many, many talks guaranteeing directors or CERN that LEP2 had very good chances to find supersymmetry, etc. We failed. But you see, in fact, it's true, we should have seen it, because you see that the Higgs mass, for example, at three levels below the Z mass, and to make it heavier, you need a heavy stop. But the stop is the cancellator of the top loop contribution to the Higgs mass. So if you push it up, you get the LEP paradox more paradoxically. Then in SUSY, the electroweak symmetry breaking is induced by the running of the up Higgs, let's say. And the fact that the Z mass has the value that we see imposes a strong constraint. It must happen at the right place. And so, since you can compute the point, the Z mass in terms of the SUSY parameters with coefficients which are known, then if you want to avoid cancellations which would be too fine-tuned, you need that these masses, for example, M1-alpha is not too large. So the limit from left that the Chargino is heavier than 100 GV implies a fine-tuning by at least 20 times. Of course, this is true if you take Gugino universality at the gut scale. Without Gugino universality, the constraint only essentially remains on the Gugino mass and is not yet incompatible, okay? But there is there a friction. So, because of this deception that supersymmetry has not been discovered, because of inspiration from string theory, because we have nothing to do in waiting for the LHC, there is a new wave of model building. And so, for example, this idea of large extra dimensions is a very interesting field, I must say, because initially the idea was to solve the hierarchy problem by bringing gravity down from M Planck to order 1 TV. Inspired by string theory, one assumes that there are large compactified extra dimensions, namely 1 over R of order, not M Planck, but 1 TV, say. Standard model fields are on a brain. This brain could have a thickness, but for the time being, consider it as neglect this small r. And gravity, oof, that fills the whole geometry, propagates in the bulk while we live here. Essentially, as you know, M. Planck is very large because G. Newton is very small. But the idea is that gravity appears weak because a lot of lines of force escape in extra dimensions. And indeed, at large distances, you have the ordinary Newton law, 1 over r squared. If you go in short distances, the extra dimensions enter in the game. The law is modified, and from matching you get this relation. Now, d minus 4 cannot be 1, because in the solar system gravity is okay. Could be 2, but it's very marginal. But for n greater than 2, this is possible. Actually, it's interesting that it is not excluded at all, right? There are these experiments on the possible deviations from the Newton law, and as I said, only for d minus 4 equal 2 there would be some hope to see effects on this plot. Otherwise, this is not relevant here. And now, there are many varieties of this model. The generic feature is that we have Kaluza-Klein modes connected to quantization in the compact extra dimension, which is like a box. If the standard fields are on a brain and the brain has a thickness, then we should see recurrences of the ordinary particles, and so at the LHC we could see these sort of things. Gravity is on the bulk, as we said. For gravity, 1 over r can be also very much smaller than the TV, of course. There can be different forms of models, with factorized metric or with warped metric, the Randall-Sundrum kind of models, which actually seem to be the most promising, I would say. Especially, there is a formula that you cannot see because of some calibration, but is repeated in the next page. So this is a very exciting scenario. However, by itself, it does not really solve any of the basic problems. For example, high hierarchy, the left paradox, let's see. High hierarchy, well, Rm naturally should be of order 1, but in the factorized metric versions is put equal to these big numbers, to this big number, and the powers are only a small alleviation of the problem. Randall-Sundrum is better in this respect, because for them Rm should only be 10, 20, provided you can understand this factor. I mean, it comes from the geometry, but you should... Well. Then, as far as the left paradox goes, if you think that the top loop problem is solved, because if you increase the energy, you decompactify the extra dimensions, then lambda must be small, as we said, because the Higgs mass is light, but precision tests put very strong lower limits on lambda. And so, by itself, it does not really work. However, it can be an ingredient of the picture, and there are many interesting directions which are being explored that use this extra dimension idea in some way or the other. For example, there is this field of symmetry breaking by orbifolding. So, for example, by the way, this is a digression, but if 1 over r, instead of being at the weak scale, which is a bit extreme, is at the gut scale, which being close to M Planck is more realistic, then there have been these interesting developments of reformulating grand unification theories in extra dimensions, for example, SU5, SO10 in 5 or 6 dimensions. And there you obtain really most of the advantages of grand unification without paying the price of, for example, a baroque Higgs system transforming like the 25 of SU5 or the 45 of SO10, etc. You have a natural solution of double triple splitting, and coupling unification can be maintained. You can even have advantages concerning proton decay, etc. So why not to try the same kind of tricks at the weak scale? Okay? So for example, people have tried to do SUSY breaking by boundary condition. For example, we can have in 5 dimensions a supersymmetric standard model, and then by taking different SUSY breakings at each boundary, you get the effective theory non-supersymmetric. Supersymmetric is only recovered when you get decompactification, And in some versions, for example, the version by Barbieri and company, the Higgs boson mass is strongly constrained, and they say is rather insensitive to the ultraviolet behavior of the theory. More recently, the people have become more ambitious. Why not eliminate the Higgs completely? Try to break gauge symmetry breaking by orbifolding without invoking the Higgs. There are many versions. For example, in the breaking of SU5 in GATS, essentially the Higgs are replaced by the fifth component of the gauge field. And this is the adjoint representation. So that gives a breaking by the adjoint that could be done easily by using the fifth component or the gauge. However, for the standard model breaking, you cannot use the adjoint. So this is a little bit more complicated. Different schemes have been tried, most failed. Now, the most solid toy model is one which uses the Randall-Sundrum background, but in a different context. The symmetry in the bulk is SU2 left cross SU2 right cross U1. On one boundary, the Planck brain, because in the Randall-Sundrum there is this big exponential which can have very different values depending on distance. And so on the Planck brain, this group is broken to the U1 of hypercharge. On the TEV brain, is broken down to SU2 diagonal. So that altogether, only U1 charge is unbroken eventually. The violation of unitarity, which is present when you have no Higgs, for example, in W longitudinal scattering, is delayed by KK recurrences. And actually, you see this breaking of SU2 cross SU2 into SU2 diagonal is similar to what happens in Technicolor theory. So, since these theories have this kind of breaking, since they become strongly interacting when you decompactify, there is a sort of new way to look at the working Technicolor classic theories, so it's interesting. However, the main problem is electroweak precision test. So far, it does not really match with what we see at LEP, because if you get the Higgs light, you get strong deviations which are not seen. Then you must try to make a conspiracy so that the Higgs LEP appears light accidentally, etc. So, toy models, but I think they are very interesting. The little Higgs models are an example of virtuosity in group theory. You want to realize that this possibility that the Higgs is a pseudo-Goldstone boson of a big global symmetry that includes an enlarged standard model gauge symmetry. And this one would be zero mass if the global symmetry was conserved. Not only that, but you need the effect of two different, the breaking of two different subgroups, or if you want, two different couplings to trigger the Higgs mass, so it can only happen at two loops. And so the coefficient in front of lambda square becomes very small. In these theories, the cancellator of the top loop is a fermion. The stop in SUSY is a scalar. And if here we have another fermion with the quantum numbers of the top, and it cancels this loop. Then you also predict W prime and Z prime and gamma prime recurrences because you need to cancel the similar loop and they arise from this duplication of the Higgs group, and then the Higgs are light. So here also the problem, the big problem, is precision tests. Normally big corrections arise, especially from W prime and Z prime exchange, inversions that lack custodial SU2 symmetry. And so eventually what you find is that you need lambda to be very big. So in a sense, you get as much fine tuning as in SUSY models. So, of course, presumably this could be fixed by further complicated models, but the situation now is indeed that if the Higgs is light, like in the standard model, analysis of lab data, and then you see that you need the scale parameter to be large, to be too small, okay? Too much, and the situation would be improved if you say that the Higgs actually is heavier, etc. Conclusion, 45. Right. SUSY, in my opinion, remains the standard way beyond the standard model, because what is unique of SUSY is that, first of all, it is well formulated, etc. And it works up to grand unification, okay? And grand unification are part of our culture. Kappa unification, neutrino masses, dark matter, all give important support to SUSY. Of course, what is the bad thing of SUSY? The bad thing of SUSY is that if SUSY discovered, everything has already been done. So that is not very satisfactory. It would be better if you find some new, completely new thing, we would become young again, okay? And so there is this new alternative. And I think that extra dimensions are clumsy, let's say. I mean, these models are not really terribly elegant. However, this is a complex, rich, attractive, exciting possibility, so it's certainly worth studying, and it's also amusing to study. Little Higgs models, in my opinion, are less attractive, because they are just a postponement, no? In my opinion, because you postpone at 10 TV what we now consider at 1 TV. However, they provide targets for experiments at LHC to shoot at, and so in this sense are interesting. So this is what more or less makes the general picture of our field at present, in my opinion. Thank you very much.
Questions for Guido? I would like to please go back to the Newton experiment. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the QCD status of the theoretical description, but there is also S problematic with the electrolyte corrections. There was a recent analysis of the CSI, Kai, and others. And we have shown with hard number calculations that the electrolyte correction of the Newton experiment is as big as the ambiguity you are discussing, so therefore there's also invalidating.
But in which direction do these corrections
go? They go also positive.
In other words, to make the discrepancy less, or to make the
right,
discrepancy.
Right, yeah. So it's.
Go.
The question is a comment. It says that I put the emphasis on the QCD treatment for the analysis of the Newton experiment, but that recently there have been also questions about the electroweak corrections, and that recent computations suggest extra corrections that go also in the direction of making the discrepancy less.
Bill.
Well, years ago, Earl Serlin and I did radio directions. So I've had some correspondence with the experimentalists on this question. It's sort of complicated. The papers don't give a detailed explanation of how the electroweak radiative corrections were done, but there's a thesis that exists that gives a detailed explanation. And if you look at that thesis, it would appear that a large piece of the radiative corrections were left out by the collaboration. There's a photon W box diagram, which is the biggest effect, and it says that it's a small effect. However, in correspondence with the experimentalists, they say that the thesis just stated it incorrectly, and that all of those corrections were put in. And as far as I can tell, numerically, from what they've told me, the corrections look like they're approximately correct, in my opinion.
But not the QCD ones.
Not the QCD.
Good. In this theory, which you discussed almost at the last, the Higgsless theory, the question is, what is the particle content, let's say, between 500 GeV and 5 TeV? And how do you unitarize or make the WW cross section, left, right scattering cross section, unitary?
Yes, the spectrum is very rich. There are all the recurrences of the W, the Z that you should see at the LHC. And precisely the presence of these towers of new particles that restore unitarity. In other words, you have a tower that goes up to infinity, but at some level there is a limit of definition of the theory. You go in a strong interaction regime, you don't understand anything anymore. So you can only account for the recurrences up to the cutoff, so it's a finite number. That means that unitarity is not completely restored, but the breaking of unitarity is delayed beyond the visibility range. Okay? So this is the way they work.
How much would the fine-tuning of supersymmetry go down if the top mass goes up by 5 GeV?
Well, I think that if the top mass goes up, then you get a better consistency of the information that we have, especially the relation between the measurement of the W mass and the measurement of sin squared theta and the direct search limits on M Higgs. This would be the main effect. This tension would be reduced. But the naturality problem for supersymmetry would not be much changed, because this depends on the fact that the Higgs appears to be light, which is true. Always light will remain, also if the top mass goes up. It would be, instead of 200, you would do 240, but it's not that the main problem. So the naturality problem of supersymmetry will remain more or less the same. However, what I was trying to say is that this fine-tuning by a factor 20, 30, 40 seems to be common to all these theories. So it's not that going to little Higgs makes things better. The fine-tuning is still there. Only it's a little bit uglier and less ambitious, because your horizon becomes very limited.
Thank you.